This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Thanks a lot for coming along tonight to learn from some of Canberra's best vegetable gardeners about their skills. My name is George Main. I'm a curator here in the People and the Environment program at the National Museum. And I thought I might just start by speaking very briefly about how the museum came to know Brett and Melissa and Chris. We started a project, I think it was year before last, with a few researchers from the University of Canberra, and they were interested in working with us to explore this phenomenon of urban farming, urban agriculture that's really taken off in Canberra and around the world. And they wanted to work on a project with us where we looked at our collection and looked in particular at items that relate to agricultural shows around Australia and to think about the way that food and farming were represented on those objects, objects like prize cups and photographs of prize cattle and ribbons and prize certificates and so on, to try and understand what's going on with this new movement around the world and how it relates to some of the more traditional ways we've thought about food and agriculture in Australia. So what we did was we made contact with the National Capital Show Society and asked them who their regular contributors to the garden produce section were, and they gave us a list of names, and three of those names were Brett King and Melissa Deedy and Chris Hunter. So I thought I'd very quickly show you what the website looks like, and here you'll see Brett in the up in the banner, and one of the objects there that we explore. We visited their gardens and took some great photos, and all those photos are online. So I encourage you to go and have a look at the terrific photos of their gardens and the other gardeners who we got to know as well. And then we also went to the show, to the judging of the show in February this year, and took photos there, and also the show last year as well. So there's great images, there's stories that our gardeners tell. We've got audio recordings of them talking about their gardening. And also there's the exhibition component with the many objects from our collection. So I encourage you to have a look at that. And the URL address is there. It's quite long, but if you need a pen, come and write it down later on. Anyway, I might hand over now to the main attractions, which and I might start with Brett here on my left. So Brett is Melissa first. Okay, Melissa's going first. So Melissa is very much involved in the Kayleen Community Garden. Her kids, some of who are here tonight, I think, are also involved. And she's also running the kitchen garden program at the school, the Brindabella Christian College. And she is one of the most talented and passionate gardeners and produce maker I have ever met. So I'm sure you'll enjoy learning from her tonight. Thank you.
George. Well, as George said, I'm part of Canberra Organic Growers. They're the ones who run all of the community gardens here in Canberra. I think we've got about 12 gardens. I think we became members about 4 years ago, maybe going on five. And when the first year we were part of them, they said, community gardens opening up in Kayleen. I think Mum and I jumped at we put our names on the list, and straight away we're in there. So now 4 years on, and we might see some of the pictures later, we've got a fantastic garden there, from a paddock that was just goats and that sort of thing next to the high school that was being unused, and so we've taken that over. And from there, we've made a lot of friends with the community garden. We have a morning tea every week. We invite people who are around to come during the day, and they come in and join in. We share a lot of books, seeds, and produce sometimes, extra plants, that sort of thing. So it becomes from something where I was working in backyard, you know, fences around you all day, not seeing anyone else, to having made a lot more friends now, being able to share knowledge that I had. I've been gardening. Mum and Dad had a bit of a veggie garden. I took on a corner in their plot, in their garden, and grew raspberries. I think the first thing I ever made was raspberry jam. Probably got one jar. Not very many. From there, it's grown. I got my own place when I was about 19. So from there, it had a veggie garden, and that was it. I've always gardened since, so quite a while now. And I've enjoy a lot of the heirloom plants. I've moved on from sort of the standard things you can just buy in the supermarket and stuff. Found that reading more magazines and books, and I got more interested in the open pollinated type varieties of heirlooms that you can save your own seeds. So I moved on then to growing quite a lot of things, and fell in love with tomatoes. They're the easiest thing to do, so they're my love. So I've got about 30 different varieties that I grow every year. I grow at least one of each, or quite several of several of them. Community garden, I've got about 100 square metres. So we've erected Rio mesh that they use under the concrete things. My husband has a business in landscape things, so he picks those up. We get them for free. I've made arches, and what I found with those is I can grow more vegetables that way. You can grow pumpkins up one side, and I'll grow beans and cucumbers and things on the other side. And I've made I sewed up a piece of shade cloth and used quite two pieces of Rio mesh end, and so quite a nice large one. There's some photographs there I can show you later. I put a netting over that and grew the tomatoes under, because I had a lot of trouble with the budworm moth, which is a bit of a problem to most people. I think because we have so many people in our community garden, it attracts more of them. They'll get into things like corn. They come in as a moth at night, attack a green fruit, and they also attack the ripe fruit. We've even had them burrowing in stems as well, and plants dying. So 70% of our crop used to get destroyed. So by putting a shade cloth over, and it's just a piece overlap so you can walk in and out, I'm using white shade cloth, and it allows more light through than the green one. So it does raise the temperature a little bit as well, which will help your tomatoes ripen. So it's a great way to protect them. If you've got a small amount, you can do a couple of stakes, put a piece of shade cloth over. You don't have to have a walk-in areas. Not many people grow as many tomatoes as I would. So tomatoes. I like to grow a variety of different sorts, so from small ones right through to the large ones. You're getting different types of ones being available throughout the year. They will keep cropping from early on till late. They're not going to ripen until it's warm enough. In Canberra, you might be possible just before Christmas, mostly after Christmas, so you get a glutton of them, unfortunately, and that's where preserving comes into it. I find the best way to grow them here in Canberra is to start them early, about July, and I do it probably about the end of July. For my seeds that I save, I'll choose what seeds are a really good shape, the largest ones. So if I've got a sheet of seeds that I save, I'll show you. Simple method, no mess. Squeeze out seeds, spread them over with a teaspoon on a piece of paper, write the name and the date. So I've got Purple Cherokee, and these were done in March 2010. So that's the sort of time of year these ones would be available. They're a very large one. They've won a prize in the show, this variety. Very difficult to win prizes in the show, getting the right particular types. I think heirlooms, we might touch on that when we talk more about what judges are looking for in the tomatoes. It's pretty tricky to get a variety that is what the judges are looking for. You can have beautiful tomatoes, but the insides and certain types of what they're looking for is a bit tricky. So this one is a winner. But that's a simple way of storing those seeds. And it's easy to fold up, and I've got hundreds of sheets in a shoebox, so you know they don't take up as much space, and very easy. That just dries in the full sun. I've got a sunny room and put them in the full sun. So that's dry. When it's dry, fold it up and put it away for the following year. And you can cut pieces out, as you can see I have. So if you wanted to plant the whole lot, if they were all fairly good seeds, I can just tear a sheet, put it in, cover it with only a fine layer of soil. And heated mat's the best thing. You can buy heated trays these days with thermostat control, with covered lids. I have a glass house, just a small one. Great idea, but no good when you've got hail, fortunately. You have to keep repairing. But there are poly-type ones. There's plenty of cheap plastic ones you can buy around, and the boxes you can get without heating. You can even put them on top of hot water system. As long as they've got good full sun and you water them regularly when they're small, they've got to stay moist. The best thing about that is they'll be up in about 4 days on a very nice warm bed. You don't have to wait weeks to see that they're going to be up. If you plant them in the ground, I tend to find you'll lose them. You get self-seeded ones come up and you're not sure what you've planted. Being composted, you can't always tell whether the seeds have died off in the compost, and a lot of the time they don't. They re-sprout. Tomatoes are notorious for it. Not sure how we're going for time.
Another five left.
Yes. You want to do a demonstration? Sure. Yes. Okay. I just say when planting them, using a good compost is important. I water with sea salt. It's a great plant strengthener. It's not a food. So it's important to understand that you need to feed them as well regularly, but not too high nitrogen. You'll get too much leaf growth. Sulfate of potash is really important. That also is a plant strengthener and also sweetens the flavour of the tomatoes. I leave mine in pots, so they'll go from seedling into maybe a small pot, then maybe to a larger pot, and leave them in that till they flower. What happens is they're root bounding. It doesn't do any damage to the plant, but it shocks it into flowering earlier. So you'll produce a flower much sooner, and then you can plonk it in the ground. Once it's set those little buds, you put it in the ground. And if it's earlier than, say, October, cover them, of course. You can buy shade cloth, you can put sheets, as long as it doesn't touch the plant, and take it off every day if you've got something like a sheet. You can plant them out. It's probably best about Melbourne Cup days. Probably safe that there's no frost, but it doesn't hurt. We can get the odd frost. That's a great time to put them out. The bigger they are at that time, the more yield you're going to get, the earlier you get them in the ground. 2 weeks difference can be up to, on a Tigerella tomatoes, about 7 kilos of tomatoes difference. So it's quite a lot. Well, they produce about 20 kilos so on that plant average. The earlier you plant them, better, because our days are short. So now, going into gluttons of tomatoes, if you've got too many and you can't process quick, they're great to freeze. If you've got no bugs and things like that, wash them, destalk, in bags, straight in the freezer. You can then take them out and process them in this. Basically, this removes the skin and seeds, which tend to make it bitter. I find putting them in raw is a lot of work. It's easier to pop them into a preserving pan and cook them until they soften a lot more, and also reducing that water content too. So when you then run them through here, you can also add other things, like sometimes I've got too many zucchinis, it's nice to bulk up the mix. You can add in a few zucchinis when you're cooking it. Onion, I tend to keep away from garlic. There is some problems with, I haven't confirmed it, but a lot of people say there's problems with botulism with garlic putting into certain things. I have used it, but I wouldn't recommend it to anyone, just in the fact that there is a problem with that. But you can make a passata sauce very easily, adding lots of different vegetables. I find the zucchini, you don't taste it much in it. It'll give a slightly different colour, so it might be a bit darker. But heirloom tomatoes, I've got so many different colours. You don't particularly always get red. You'll get a dark brown in colour through to red to a purple colour, depending on what variety is the most at the time. I have to run it through this one a couple of times just to get it a really nice, dry waste mix so that you're not losing all the liquid. And the more you cook it, the more denser and more concentrated the sauce will be. So when you actually go to bottle it, sterilising bottles first. Dishwasher is pretty good at sterilising. And clean, label-free is important for the method I use, because the Italian method was to pop them in the water and boil for so many hours. I can't remember the... I did it once before. We had trouble. The water would leak in and had too much stuff. And anyway, the easiest method is once bottled, you leave a headspace, and it's got to be... For shows, it's about a centimetre for anything you're bottling, for shows, jams, anything. So that headspace allows for... expansion when it's heating. And if you put the sauce in hot, so I would run it through that mill, then reboil it again to make sure it's super hot. Bottles are hot as well, so the best place is wash them, rinse them in the oven, put it at 100 degrees, 10 minutes, leave the oven on at that 100 degrees, and if you then fill it with the hot sauce, cap it, put them on a tray is the easiest thing, and stand them upright in the oven again and do it for 1 hour at that 100. And that then is the second preserving you have to with tomatoes, because it's a low acid and you'll get botulism or they'll explode. I can imagine. I haven't done it yet, but I have read some very funny stories of exploding rotten tomatoes all through patches, if you can imagine what a mess that would be. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've got some tips. There'll be some tasting food, and I've got a few things there to buy if you're interested tonight, some home cooking that I've done. Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa. Now, I should have said at the start there's going to be lots of time to ask questions after our three presenters have spoken, so keep the questions in mind and we'll return a bit later. So now I'll introduce Chris, who has been a steward at the Canberra Show for about 15 years in the garden produce section. He's an avid gardener in Fraser, so he's going to talk a bit about his gardening and the ideas behind what he does, and then he'll share a skill, as Melissa just shared many skills. Okay.
Oh, good evening. I was born in southeast London. During the post-war years, growing one's own vegetables and fruit became a very necessary need, due to the lack of supply and money. Community allotments were around all sorts of places, in fact using all available land, for example along the railway tracks, recreational areas, and indeed these were similar to the community programs around now. My father grew edibles to feed the family, and there was as little as possible wasted, something which has stayed with me throughout my life. Upon migrating to Australia, I continued my father's tradition of home growing and enjoy the satisfaction which it brings. Our 1,200 metre block is on the northern slopes of Mount Rogers, so besides the house. It consists of a water feature, shrubs, annuals, eucalyptus, pistachio, a native frangipani at the front. We're lucky on the northern slopes, we're pretty well frost-free, apart from the really severe ones. Both sides of the block have passion fruit, one on the eastern side of the house, but on the western side of the fence, and vice versa on the other side. On the rear wall of the house, which is facing due north, we have some spelerated lemon and grapefruit. And then there's a large grassed area down, bordered by a conifer hedge screen, and leading down to the vegetable growing areas. We have apple trees grafted with several varieties, plum, pomegranate, and another lemon also growing in this area. There's a chook yard further west, so there are eggs for all of us and company, and a plentiful supply of manure to enrich the soil for veg production. Most of this enrichment happens over the winter months. And we have supported the Royal Canberra Show for many years. My wife, daughters, and now son-in-law, entering cookery, garden, and other exhibits into the show. My entry into show competition stemmed from making a comment as an observer wandering around on the Sunday afternoon, and the pavilion at that stage had no air conditioning or refinements like that. And so on a Sunday afternoon, things were getting pretty tired. And I commented in a normal sort of voice that, geez, our tomatoes are better looking than those. And I got a tap on the shoulder by a steward who had heard my remark, and he asked me why I didn't enter. Well, the following year I did, and I won. And I've got the ribbon to prove it. From then on, I've been an avid supporter of the show, and this means that I need to pay extra special attention to my own backyard garden. Timing of planting to coincide harvest for the show is vital. We rotate and enrich the vegetable patches every season, paying particular attention to sunlight and those westerly winds. Flowers and flowering shrubs are a vital component close to the vegetable growing areas, encouraging the bees to do what they do best. The afternoon prior to the show, I gather in the harvest. Everything we have available to enter in so many different classes. It is of utmost importance to read the schedules very carefully. Screening for those tomatoes which are of the same size, colour and weight. The eggs which are the same shape and colour and shown with a point down. The cucumbers, which are uniform in length and colour. The rhubarb, again, uniform in length and colour. And so it goes on for the lemons, apples, pomegranates, and one of our judges' favourites, eggplant. We take spares to the show, just in case there's a damaged piece, which needs replacing for staging. Those summer storms always occur, one or two days at the wrong time, and the tomatoes are the fruit which suffer in the most severe manner. The cold rain on the warm fruit quickly causes it to split. The show schedule includes all the information which is necessary and must be read carefully to ensure no disqualification. For example, stems should be removed from tomatoes, ensuring that there are no cracks on the top. None of that should be evident. Some tips which I'm happy to share. After harvesting beans, I roll them in newspaper tightly. We have to stage more often than not 12 beans for the entry, so you put sort of 14 or 15 in there, all the same sort of length. Roll them up tightly in newspaper, pop them in the crisper overnight, and they stay like that, ready for judging. We clean the eggs with a damp cloth to free them of all soil and inspection for defects. Tricks of the trade. The common coat hanger. Wonderful piece. You can use dozens of these in the garden. And indeed, just by pulling them apart like so, you can then put them down beside or inside the dwarf beans. because they, generally speaking, grow to about a foot high. That gives them just that little bit of support in those windy days, which we cop in Fraser. Very handy to put amongst your flowers, etc. Stops the birds landing on them. And once they get their heads knocking on the, they exit fairly quickly. Finally, nothing beats that prize card or ribbon for bragging rights, and we've all got them. It can also be the encouragement to get back into the competition for the following year, or to challenge that person who made a comment at the show about them having better produce at home. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. I loved your description of your garden that you started with, and if you want to see that garden, go to the website and some great photos there. Anyway, our last speaker tonight is Brett King, who is a avid backyard gardener in the Gungahlin area. Brett is currently chief steward of the garden produce section at the Canberra show, and he's been a steward there for 10 years. And you'll see the photo up here. He's talking to the judge at the show. I think that was last year. So he's accompanied judges as part of his work as a steward and learnt from them. And he's going to share some of those insights tonight. Thanks.
Good evening, everybody. As George said, myself and my wife and family, we live in Gungahlin out at Amaroo, and when we moved into our place 13 years ago, it was rock. And since then, some areas still haven't improved, but the vegetable garden was the first thing that went in. Like Chris mentioned earlier, I got into the show exactly the same way as he did, by walking past saying, my stuff's better than this, and someone saying to me, we'll have a go. So I did, but not, unlike Chris, I didn't win the next year. It took me a few years to be able to succeed, but it's the challenge. I really enjoy just the comradeship with the other people, learning from them, etc. We've always had a garden in our family, like Chris, although we're not from England. I come from central New South Wales. My father always had a veggie garden, again, to feed us. Not being well off, nothing went to waste, and from then it's always just sort of been in my blood. To feed us, you can't beat the taste. The highlight of my week is a Saturday and Sunday morning when I get up at daylight, there's nobody else around, and I just go to the garden. It's probably going to extreme saying what I live for, but it's just so relaxing, and to try new methods, to experiment. Always learning from either read or from people at the show. There's so much knowledge. If anyone's interested in joining us at the show, be a steward or anything else, some of the things I've learnt there. Chris mentioned the bean trick. I was going to mention that in my talk, but he stole my thunder. He gave that to me a couple of years ago. Things like that. Another thing I've learnt just the other day, when you're pruning laterals out of tomato, I wasn't aware, I haven't tried it yet. If you just, when you prune your tomato, if you stick them into the ground, apparently they'll grow. I haven't tried it yet, but that was reported to me from my sister, who is not a great gardener, but she's also trying to learn. There's always some learning, some different things to pick up on. I probably do learn a lot of my gardening from talking to other people. I'm also a member of the Horticultural Society of Canberra, where there is just so much knowledge in there, and it's just from talking, basically, people's tips, ideas, and all, anything really to do. Like, one thing I've learnt of late is I've always believed that bees are the most important things in the garden, and I read somewhere years ago that if we didn't have any bees left in Earth, the world would end. And one thing I've just learnt lately, one of those well-known chemicals, Confidor. Nearly every gardener at some time would have used it to control some sort of pests. It does not kill the bees, it makes them disorientated. It has been banned by the Royal Horticultural Society in England for some years, and they're looking at doing it in Canberra. And what led me on to this point, I'm sort of going to... I don't know about greenery or anything else, I'm really going organic. There are so many more benefits from organic gardening, I see. Like Chris has, he has a chook pen. I have a chook pen. They do all my work in the gardens. Like he says, your soil preparation starts in winter. Mine does too. I'll pull everything out except for my... I'll have some beds saved for my winter crops, my brassicas. The rest of them will get covered with leaf mulch, grass clippings, anything scraped out of the chook pen, and I'll let them sit for a month or so. Then each individual bed, I will then put the chooks into for 2 weeks, and they will dig and turn all that soil in, and I'll move them onto the other beds until coming up to now, they're all shut out of it again, just to run around the lawn. And basically, that's the only fertiliser I'll use from now on. I may give them a boost, as Melissa said, sea salt, a plant tonic. I may use a bit of blood and bone, but that's basically all I use now. I don't go for anything chemical, except, I must say, I tell a lie, just before showtime, when you're trying to get your produce good, I'll go for one of these quick liquid feeds. Give that to them 2 weeks beforehand. It seems to make them... They look better. They're not going to taste any different or anything else. It's just the appearance of them looking better. And that's the only time I'll use a chemical fertiliser. I've learnt just of late about all the hoverflies and the ladybirds and everything else. I learned a bad lesson 2 years ago. I had all these ladybirds in my garden. I thought they were the good ones. Someone said, you count the spots on the back. I can't remember the numbers now. And they were the bad ones, and they just about decimated my crop until I was told. And that was just, again, not thinking I was doing the right thing. It was just through talking to somebody where I'd read somewhere ladybirds are good. I thought I was doing the right thing, but I was just saying. And that's one of the things with the show. Just talking in general, the learning. There's nothing better, as Chris says, as the ribbon there. We were even talking before. He's got a ribbon there I've never been able to achieve, and I'm going to go for it this year, whether I do get it or not. I have been trying for the last 5 years, but it's just the fun of trying to get something like that and the talking point. When we are at the show, like up there on the with the judge there, a judge will look at the produce for commercial, the first thing. How is this going to look commercially? And in saying that, is it uniform shape? Chris mentioned before, 12 beans, nearly all categories will have a certain number of them, 3 zucchinis, 3 cucumbers, 10 cocktail tomatoes, we say, all various things. And you look for uniformity and commercial. You look at it as an exhibit and think, that looks good. They're all the same size. They're all unmarked. They're fresh. They're crisp. And then that's the first thing a judge will look at. And then the next thing he may do in different categories, if he's got exhibits that are pretty well even, he will then cut them. Some judges, and again, I was talking to Chris before, it depends on the day on what a judge is looking for. Some judges will look for uniformity in a cut tomato. He'll look, and each side will mirror each other. Another judge will like seeds. Another judge won't like seeds. And we really don't know until the day what the judge is looking for. For the last couple of years at the Royal Canberra Show, we have used judges that have been used at the Sydney Royal Easter Show, where it is top-notch competition up there. So we've got some pretty knowledgeable judges coming through Canberra. And that the reason we've gone to that stage, because of the number of entries we are getting each year, it's just growing. I should have brought some photos of the one particular photo of our pavilion last year, even after the hot heat wave, which decimated a lot of gardens, mine included, some areas of it. Our benches were still packed and the hall was still full, and we still had lots of comments. Chris also mentioned if entering into the show, read the schedule down to the last point. As he said, number of items per exhibit, the size. You may have a zucchini under 20 centimetres. As I said, with the number of entries we are getting at the Canberra Show now, last year we had to measure some entries because we've got it's getting so close in the judging, right? These two are 20, this one's 21. I'm sorry, it's not as per schedule, so we can't judge that. And that's how things are going, so you do need to read your schedule. Size, quantity, in your collections. If it's a collection, we'll say six different varieties, so that'll mean you, not just six individual fruit or vegetables, you need a set of tomatoes of three, you need a set of cucumbers, you might need a set of zucchinis, you need your 12 beans. As I said, read your schedule. Going back on the heat, one thing I'm looking for myself is to really grow the student section at the Canberra show, and it might come from people like you or anyone else we can get out there, because as you'd be aware, January is school holidays, the show is the third week in February, so the gardens, if they haven't been kept alive over January, it's very hard for the schools to enter. We're looking to encourage educational things, which contacting the show, the schools we plan to. We still don't know how to do it because of the different regimes, and what we've found difficult, I'm just having off on a tangent, as I said to George, there's no central contact. We have to go to each school individually. Is that it?
Just about.
I think that's all. It must be all. I've been given time. And thank you. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Thanks, Brett. And if anyone's thinking of entering in the show next year, I imagine it's a good idea to have a look at the website. Would that be right for details and schedules?
Yeah,
and
the schedule will be on the website, but it's just getting finalised at the moment.
OK, great. Anyway, we're going to open up for questions soon, but I thought I might just quickly ask our panel if they'd like to speak very, very briefly, maybe 30 seconds or so each, to the collections you've brought in front of you. Brett had a wonderful photo in an album there, which I thought he might like to share with people. And if you could just speak into the microphone so it's all recorded, that'd be great.
You may need to come up later and have a look. This is our first house. We did have two houses in Amaru. We outgrew this house. But if you can see that watermelon there, that was there, my first ever prize. We did get a first ever first prize, I must say. And that was my son, he's now 20. That watermelon started off being self-sown in a compost bin, and I actually nurtured it, and that was the result. So, and I love that photo because you can see the yard. There's a bit of lawn up the back. There's no paving done. There's no nothing, but around the side of the house, the veggie garden was there and fully productive. These are some of the prize ribbons. These are the champion ones that we all strive for. As I mentioned before, I've got some here for horticultural produce collection. That's a collection where you put out some vegetables and some jams, I normally, and a sauce. We need six different across the hall. The hall has preserves, has cookery, vegetables, flowers, and different things. And you need six, no more than three from the one section. And I've been lucky enough to win that. I've also won the best single exhibit, and that was for my corn. I've won it a couple of times, actually. I like my corn. It's probably my favourite. It gets special attention. But the one I want is the one Chris has got up there, which I believe is the best one. It's the best collection. And that's where you've got to get six vegetables. All of good, a set of six vegetables, all of prime condition. So you've got to cover all aspects. And that's the one I'm after.
Okay, well, I've only brought a few of the prizes here. My children also enter things, so I've got a few of theirs there. I've only got one ribbon to display. That was a bit of a fluke. That was the champion condiments. So it won the jam spreads and preserves. So all the entries that went in, it was the best entry overall of those entries. So it was amazing. It was the first year I'd actually gone back, and actually after doing vegetables for a few years, I thought, I'm always making these things. I'll just take a box full of jars and things. And so I sat up till 3 o'clock, made the mustard pickles, which I've never made before, and made it. And I put it on the shelf, and I was looking at all the other ones. I'm thinking, mine just looks terrible. The colour was so pale and everything. But when they actually went through and tasted it, and I happened to be sitting there watching the judges, and I saw it go through and won the first prize. And I'd wandered off and they were taking photography on the day for the display, so I kept getting taken off here, there and everywhere. And I walked outside. I came back in later in the afternoon and they told me I'd won the ribbon, which blew me away. This is the first time I'd gone back in and done it. So there's a lot of photos here which you can all come up and have a look. I'm still striving to win a few more prizes in that area, but hopefully I'd like to win a collection one, which is where you have to... I've got plenty of seconds, 2 years running now I've been doing it, and that's making the all the different preserves, and it's having a different range of different things, so you might get jams, jellies, pickles, maybe olives. You could have a whole heap of different things. And I've done that 2 years in a row, and the first time I did it, I got second, and last year, second. I keep getting beaten. The lady who does it is absolutely fabulous, does fantastic, beautiful labels and decorates the bottles, and it's a real treat to do. They don't open and taste these ones. It's all on presentation and bottle, maybe particular shapes of bottles and things that you use as well. So I've been told to keep trying. A lovely cooking teacher who got me into it. There's a photograph of here somewhere when I was at school. So that's what started me off when I was in 10 years. So anyway, I'll pass on to Chris.
Well, bragging rights. I've got three ribbons here, one for best fruit entry, one for the best collection, and one for the best single exhibit. Well, I'm not the best single exhibit because without my wife, no way, no, I could have got these. It really is a lot more help, yeah. And knowledge of gardening that we've both been able to put together. One tip, if you've got excess beans, we'll use the 666 method. 600 grams of water, or millilitres of water, 600 grams of beans, 6 minutes in the microwave. Run them under cold water, dry them, freeze them. And you just, like your normal supermarket frozen produce, comes back out again. Otherwise, our methods of glutton is passing on to neighbours, friends, the family and so on. Thank you.
Hi. We have terrible problems with possums and peacocks just coming in and digging and eating everything that pops up except garlic. So I was just wondering if those coat hangers might be a way of constructing a cage, or if you have any other suggestions or tips for protecting our produce.
I can take this one on board slightly. There is an old wives' tale about mothballs scattered around naphthalene flakes. That's my method, but I'm not sure about that. As far as the coat hangers go, we've got a tub with some birds of paradise, which are only now 2 years old. We haven't had a flower yet, but this year hopefully. But they were destroyed totally by the birds, parrots. And then what I finished up doing was putting a circle right around the pot of these, and that's cured it. We don't get birds landing in there because they can't. They won't land on top of the coat hanger, and they just move away. As far as the possums go, well, you have to use those other methods. There are professional people that will deal with those for you. You've got to be very careful because they're a protected species.
I've got two dogs. It seems to do the trick.
Perhaps enclosing it all is the better method. I have seen a few on TV had same problems. Wild animals coming in, kangaroos, things like that. Just a metal frame and using a shade cloth or wire, fairly stretched nicely, and that allows the light to get through well. That's probably the only way, unless you want to get the possums removed, that they don't. Generally, there's more than one. I've got a few living in a roof, fortunately, but at least my garden's down the road, so I don't generally have a problem with that.
I didn't realise this was about showing, you know, ag shows. So different requirements on how you grow or what you select. But to me it's a bit disturbing that the shows are encouraging or requiring everything be uniform. I mean, Coles and Woolies do that. They said your bananas have to be a foot long. I want small bananas, I want small apples. I don't want everything to be like it came out of a plastic box, you know. And I'm a bit disturbed the show perpetuates that, that everything's going to be uniform, and therefore it encourages waste and discarding anything that might have a slight thing. So it does disturb me, actually, that that's been promoted by the show.
Yeah, I was going to ask that, you know, with these, alternative ideas arising about, you know, what good produce is, I was wondering whether some of the judges are starting to respond to some of those concerns and interests in how they then judge at the shows.
What we look at the show is for the best produce. Now, the best produce is we are learning every day. It's not by looks, it's what they taste like. We know things taste a lot better than they look, especially out of a vegetable garden. I don't know how about I'll take it on board, but whether we can get judges to taste everything else. That, I suppose, if you want to win these ribbons and say I'm the best gardener, you pick out your best stuff and take it to the show.
Thanks. I just wanted to pick up on the previous questioner's question. You touched on the use of heirloom seeds, etc. You know, what role do you play in promoting the use of those goods as such? We talked about the judges' responsibilities, but what more can we do? And do you think there's a shift now towards the use of heirloom products and organic farming, which you also talked about?
One thing in particular, I'm glad you mentioned that, with the Canberra show, we've had a particular organic or heirloom seed company from Queensland who's providing us with some small sponsorship, and that will be offered as prizes, some seeds from them to encourage more heirloom growing. We are supporting them. It's only our second year. Last year was with the centenary show, they came on board. This is our first year really with them. We're trying to build a relationship with them to grow their heirloom and, as I believe, just my personal view, the better sort of vegetable, but we'll see how we go. But we're giving out some of their their stock as prizes to encourage them and have their catalogues and et cetera free. So that's one small step we're taking.
I've just started a vegetable garden, so, and you'd mentioned you had an interest in corn, so I just wondered if you had any hot tips for growing corn and, in general, any other hot tips for growing vegetables.
For corn, me, the most important thing is to grow it in a block and not in a straight line. Corn self-pollinates. When you look at the corn plant, the top will drop pollen down onto the silks, and if it's in a block, you have more chance of the pollen falling down amongst the plants. If it's in a straight line, the wind's blowing, say, this way, it's going to blow all the pollen away and not fall on the silk. A second thing is don't plant them too close together to allow that pollen to drop onto each individual silk. And a lot of water and mulch. That's all it is, lots of mulch, and that's how I seem to go.
A very simple answer. Buy a copy of The Canberra Gardener. It's written by the Horticultural Society. Numerous editions now. When I first came to Canberra in 1974, we got our 40 shrubs and 10 trees and a copy of The Canberra Gardener. Very valuable information pertaining to Canberra.
Just one other tip I meant to say before. When you've got seeds like these are beetroot or silver beet, it's actually a cork. No, they are a seed, but you could call them a cork. Soak your seeds overnight. Just assists in germination. You wanted another tip for something else? I meant to mention it before.
I agree, yeah. Silver beet and beetroot, similar looking seeds and best germination ever. Going to seeds as well. Carrots, a lot of people have a lot of trouble growing them. Seed packets bought can often be very old, and carrot seeds need to be extremely fresh. The best thing to do is to, as we found with a community garden, I never had any luck at home growing them, in the community garden, we were all trying different things, different varieties, and we could then get it quickly in a short amount of time testing things because we were all doing different things to see what was the best thing. And letting it to go to seed, harvesting that seed, planting it straight away, is the greatest way to get it. There's various varieties, depends on what you want to produce. I think a Chardonnay is probably quite a good one. I don't show carrots very often. I'm not very good at getting them to germinate sometimes. It's also watering them too. Some people will follow moon planting. That's been sort of proven sometimes in where we've planted some things. Same with the corn, moon planting. I did a bit of a practice with the first year we had the garden and planted a ton of corn right at the right time. I can't remember it now which it is, but you've got to know when the what time of when the moon is up as to when to plant particular crops. Some will be flowering above the ground, some will be root crops. So the same with the carrots. And I got an astounding amount of corn germinate, whereas I did one a week or two later as a second crop, and I barely got a very good germination, same seed packet. So something, nothing was different. We did the same method, same soil. Everything was much the same. Tried a bit of charcoal, I think, was something we'd read about. We tried that. Excellent germination. Fantastic crop. I think I entered them in and I won a prize doing 6 collection of vegetables. It's extremely hard to do. You guys would probably agree. It's pretty hard to get very good quality produce and getting 6 different varieties. That's the first time I've ever done it. So the corn was one of the extra things I had that was quality enough that I could enter for that one.
Is it necessary to pinch out the tips of growing tomatoes?
Pinch out the tips? Well,
the laterals.
Sure. For me, I don't bother. If you want to reduce the crop and you want to allow, say, more light into the plant, you want to get, say, slightly bigger fruit and less to actually run through a machine and freeze or bottle or whatever, I don't do it because I want as many as I can for a long period of time. And you do reduce your crop if you do that. You can do it if you don't want a lot of tomatoes. That's best. My mum, who's here today, she does prune because there's only the two of them, so they don't want to make too much sauces and things like that. So that's where it comes in handy if you want to train it a bit more. It is a little bit harder to tie them up when they're, the heirloom varieties tend to be quite tall. You need to stake them well, tie them up. The method I use is... you can come down and have a look a little bit closer underneath the shade cloth. I've got the Rio. And I actually found I don't tie them much anymore unless I've got them in the centre of that area. And I plant them along the outside, along the Rio, and I can just weave them in the Rio and they grow up. And eventually, with the shade cloth, I go between the wire and the shade cloth and they were growing right up over my head. So they are too tall for stakes unless you've got some other method to do them, you would need to cut them down. And some varieties, you can buy a lot of shorter varieties. There's one that doesn't need staking, produces all at once, and you can use them for sun-dried tomatoes. A Principal Borghese tomato, they're fairly small. There's certain ones you can get that you don't need to then trim down as well. So varieties purely, are another thing.
Purely to reduce the crop.
It's to reduce the crop, yes, and also so you don't have to do as much tying up and... Pardon? That's it. You can manage the plant a little easier. For me, I don't bother, and I've done that for 20-odd years, so I'm not fussed about that sort of thing.
I actually had a question for the audience. Does anyone here have any hot tips they'd like to share with anyone else? Because I know there's a lot of knowledge and expertise in the room. Is anyone game to volunteer something? We've got a taker. I love it. Thank you.
I was just interested in the lady who spoke about the possums I've had similar problems and tried everything, you know, wasabi spray, the lot. The only thing I've found that works is a product. It comes off the electricity. It's called Strayban, and it emits a very high-pitched sound, which they don't like. And they don't come... They used to eat my roses. They used to mess up my deck. They don't come there anymore. And I just keep this on all the time. I haven't got shares in it or anything, but it's the only thing that has actually stopped the possums from sort of coming too close and messing things up. I like the possums apart from that.
Okay, well, I will just say thank you very much, everyone, for coming, and to our panellists for sharing so much of their knowledge. So if everyone could thank our panel.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.